Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Moving Right Along, a Muppet Movie podcast brought to you by ToughPigs.com. It's the podcast where we watch Muppet Treasure Island 2 minutes at a time and talk about it a lot. I'm your host, Anthony Strand.
And I'm your other host, Ryan Rowe.
Joining us today is a very special guest. He's been with us, I think, for every movie, and he's back with us again for this one. Who are you, guest?
Hi, it's Jesse Hassinger. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Of course, always a pleasure.
Yeah.
This is like Jesse, you're definitely one of the people who, this is the only time you and I talk ever.
that's true. Yeah. Well, since you're not on Twitter, I only know what you're up to depending on your letterbox.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Same. Exactly. All right. So Jesse is joining us for minutes 21 and 22 of Muppet Treasure Island. In these minutes, Jim Hawkins and the boys meet some of the old Muppet gang from TV's The Muppet Show.
Yeah.
And we start where we left off. We left Jerry Nelson, shaved Jerry Nelson in mid-sentence last time. And the last thing he said was, "his rich." And that turns out to be his rich half-wit son, young Squire Trelawney.
Uh-huh.
And Jerry does this like wheezing chuckle right after he says it. And I love that. That makes the line for me.
He knows what they're in for when they meet young Squire Trelawney.
Right, that's the thing.
I haven't read Treasure Island. I'll be a level with you guys and say that. Did you guys read it? I know one of you was reading Christmas Carol along with The Muppet Christmas Carol.
That was me, and I'm doing the same with Treasure Island.
I have no ideas, and I only know based on this movie and Treasure Planet and maybe bits and pieces of like a more faithful Treasure Island adaptations over the years. The half-wit son a thing, no, or is that just something they invented for the movie?
They invented it for this movie. It's just Squire Trelawney.
Okay.
It's just, presumably Fozzie's dad is the character from the book.
So I guess they maybe thought it, like, for Fozzie to be this character, there has to be an explanation for why he's this goofy guy instead of a serious squire. Uh-huh. I don't know.
Right. Well, and that's that thing we've talked about too, where, like, Fezziwig is actually very good casting for Fozzie.
Yes.
Like not even just the name, but like he's slots
just a happy guy
into the like, he's the like jovial showman.
Right.
You know? And here they didn't have as natural of a fit. So they got him here. But what I do like is that after Jerry Nelson's chuckling, we cut straight to Fozzie Bear looking at the treasure map.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no scene where the boys enter. There's no, like, we have this map, right? We cut straight to Fozzie Bear in a powdered wig saying it's a genuine treasure map.
Yeah, you're right. That's his introduction. There's no, like, there's a big chair, and the chair turns around, and it's Fozzie Bear sitting there.
And it's Fozzie, and he says, Jerry Nelson, draw up a standard rich and famous contract for Jim Hawkins and company. So he has a magnifying glass. He's going over the map.
Yeah, this is the, like, comedy directors like to do this where the magnifying glass is in front of his eye, so it makes his eye look large to us.
Yes.
Right. And I think we've discussed this on the podcast before, but the best ever example of this is in Top Secret.
Yes.
When Peter Cushing pulls down the magnifying glass and actually just has one giant eye.
Yep. That's what it always makes me think of when I see anything like this. Yeah.
Oh yeah, the same thing with a phone. Anytime they have a phone in a perspective thing, I think of the giant phone in Top Secret.
Sure. Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, we don't need to talk about Top Secret all night, but the sight gags are the best thing about that movie, I think. There's so much craft and like care taken with them. It's wild.
If listeners haven't seen the movie Top Secret, go out and check that out.
Mm-hmm. Which I feel like, I mean, it's whatever, Airplane, Naked Gun, it's those guys.
Yeah.
Between those two movies, in fact. And it's different. It doesn't feel the same, but it's funny.
Not quite, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, but in this one, this is from the director of The Happy Time Murders. And
Ouch.
That's true. I mean, I guess I could say, like, Top Secret is from the director of An American Carol, right? Like, few directors have a spotless record, right?
Yeah.
Charles Laughton is just about the only one who directed one movie. So anyways, Fozzie says that he knows it's a genuine map, treasure map, because Mr. Bimbo told him so. And Ryan is frowning.
Mr. Bimbo told him so, and Mr. Bimbo lives in his finger.
So, yes, the man who lives in Fozzie's Finger. So
here we go.
What do we think about old Mr. Bimbo?
It, to me, not to get too like in the weeds on a silly gag, and sure, I like to see Fozzie being silly and stuff. And like maybe you could even say this is makes some kind of meta sense, because it's if it's a weak gag, like then that's pretty Fozzie Bear, I guess.
That's true.
But it does have a little bit of, and I think this is true of a lot of the gags in the movie, though I do like it, the movie, of course. There are a lot of the gags in it to me feel a little like, okay, that first idea, best idea, I guess. Like, there's not a lot of, you know, you talk about that. It's actually very instructive to talk about Top Secret, if unfair. The sight gags and stuff like and verbal gags in Top Secret are like very kind of precise. And in this movie, I would not say the same. It's a lot of kind of, I know it's a lot of some of the Muppet Show, you know, standbys worked on this, but it has a little bit, it feels a little creaky. It feels a little musty, like, yeah. You know, like I said, kind of first, like, okay, that was the first thing you thought of, and they didn't go back and go, well, do we have something funnier here than a man lives in my finger? You know, it just, it feels very, like, kind of, I don't know, like, kiddie show. Not, like, a bad kiddie show, even, just, like, kind of a not very good. Even, I think they even say in the movie, like, this is a movie for kids, and I think they say that in Christmas Carol, too, but, like, I just never, not to be like, I hate to be one of the Onion article that a lot of my friends say I am, of the Muppet, you know, the adult male who enjoys the Muppets on a much deeper level.
Yeah.
But I bristled a little bit when they say, I know it's a different part of the movie, when they say like, oh, well, this is a kids movie. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I thought the Muppets were like kind of for everybody, not like a kids movie.
Yeah. No. But that
finger gag is for a kids movie.
Yeah. We talked about that, where my interpretation of that is like, that's the movie telling the parents and the audience that they're wrong if they think it's a kid's movie. We just showed you that it's wrong, that this is not a kid's movie.
Sure. Jesse, also, let the record state that you said it's like a kiddie show. Not a bad one, just a not very good one. That's how you described it. Like,
not like the, I don't mean like it's like the Care Bears or whatever, but like it's not, also not, you know, maybe it's like Muppet Babies versus like the actual Muppet Show.
Sure. I can see that. How about you, Ryan?
Well,
what do you think about Mr. Bimbo?
Days? So I like a lot of jokes in this movie. I've been standing up for a lot of things in this movie. Mr. Bimbo might be my least favorite thing in it. I don't know. I'll let you know as we go along if I find something in it that I like less than Mr. Bimbo. But it's not okay. So it has no basis in the book. So there's no, like, it's not motivated in that way, which might help a little bit if it were. But why not? You know, it's not Fozzie. Why not make Squire Trelawney a guy who tells people bad jokes, or I don't know. It just bears so little resemblance to the Fozzie.
Ah!
Oh, there you go. to Fozzie's character. I don't know. Don't understand why. I do not understand why, and I don't find it funny.
Sure.
So
I actually went into this thinking, like, I gotta be positive. I gotta assume the best. Maybe Mr. Bimbo actually is funny.
Yeah.
And then he said it, and he's been to the moon twice. And so, I was just like, Fozzie said that, and I'm just like, nope, I'm done. Mr. Bimbo.
So I had forgotten about that joke, and I actually laughed at that this time.
Oh, is that right? Is that right?
Nice. I was like, well, okay, I'll give him that. That one's good.
Sure. Well, I do like what Jesse said, that it's like, this is Fozzie being unfunny, and Fozzie is unfunny. And I kind of do like the idea that, like, some very funny stand-ups are not successful in films because they can't. You can't like make a character work. So the idea that this is just like a bad like film role for Fozzie Bear. I kind of like that more. So, actually, it kind of makes me.
Okay.
He just flounders when he's not right. He doesn't have the microphone.
Right, he could be doing the banana sketch. But instead, he's stuck with this material, Mr. Bimbo,
He could be telling everybody jokes on the ship, and I don't know, anything.
Yeah.
But this is like, the character of Fozzie is sort of adrift for a few years after this, and
this really set him off.
It's like, they just forgot who Fozzie had been, and it's like, let's just make him really, really stupid.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm sure it doesn't help that this is also like right not is Frank Oz is being less involved and all that. Like all the really the main who I think of as the main Muppets besides Gonzo are kind of like in this movie and kind of beyond this movie, sort of not. I mean, I wouldn't say I don't have the problem that I think a lot of people do in terms of like, oh, it's not right. Kermit's not quite right or whatever. It's just that they're not really the main characters in these things for a while. Right. And if you can kind of feel that it feels a little rustier when they do bring them out for the 5 minutes or 10 minutes that some of them get in these movies.
Right. And I'm not sure if we've talked about this on the show yet, but Kevin Clash performed both Fozzie and Piggy on set for most of this movie. Like we know Frank Oz was there sometimes, but a lot of both of those characters was Kevin Clash and then Frank dubbed the voice later.
Right.
Yeah.
And we should note though, I know this is on the DVD commentary with Brian Henson. I think Kirk Thatcher has talked about this in interviews also, that Frank Oz initially, I guess on reading the script, said that Mr. Bimbo would never work. He didn't get it. He didn't understand why it was funny. And then they say that by the end of the production, Frank said that Mr. Bimbo was one of his favorite jokes. So
by the end of production, Frank had collected paychecks.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I think that's what happened.
That did happen.
I wish it lined up better so you could say, oh, well, after he spent some time working with Marlon Brando on the score, he just needed a laugh. But that's that much later.
Yeah. This was actually right after Indian in the Cupboard for Frank.
That was a really grueling production.
Not a laugh in there was
no.
Yeah, man, that's true. Not a lot of levity in that one.
It's true. Yeah. Strange picture. All right. So what else happens? Then we hear a loud crash and our old pal Beaker flies through the room like an arrow and gets pinned to the wall.
He must have a very pointy head.
Yes. Which I like that. I think that's funny. I really enjoy that. It's a great
entrance.
Great entrance for Beaker.
Yeah, and in the previous movie, Bunsen and Beaker were just kind of normal people. Just doing this they were just collecting money for the poor. They didn't really have a lot to do. So it's great to have this entrance where they're kind of back to their old shenanigans of something crazy is happening and Bunsen is inflicting pain on Beaker.
Right. And then Bunsen, of course, runs out, also in a powdered wig.
Yeah.
And he congratulates Beaker on a job well done and says, now we know that is definitely too much gunpowder.
That was the experiment.
Yeah.
Is this too much gunpowder or not?
And it was.
Yeah.
Bunsen and Beaker look great. Like, we've talked about the costumes. We've talked about Polly Smith, right?
Yeah.
And I think their outfits look so great in this.
Yeah.
I don't think Palisades ever got around to them, right?
I think Sam was the only one of the regular action figures, right?
I think that's right.
Yeah. There was Sam and there was Ghost Sam, who was like all white.
Right, with seaweed. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should have made all of them. I think people would buy those.
Right.
I had no idea that they even went as far as Muppet Treasure. I had no idea there were Muppet Treasure Island figures at all. I'm impressed that there was a Sam one or two.
Yeah.
Well, but they also did, am I wrong? Did they do Clueless Morgan and some of those guys? Am I misremembering?
I don't remember.
I guess not. It looks like it was rumored to be.
There were a lot of rumors before Palisades just up and went out of business. There were a lot of like, this might be coming and wave 39, or, you know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so Benjamin Gunn was announced, and then it didn't happen.
Too bad.
And, Clueless Morgan was a rumored for Series 13, which never happened.
Yeah, I mean, people love that guy, so.
They made nine waves of the action figures.
There you go. And then I also wanted to mention Bunsen is holding, I don't know what it is exactly. It's a stick that's on fire that he just used to light whatever caused the explosion. So I've just been kind of noticing how often Muppets are either handling or in the immediate vicinity of fire in this movie. And it is happening a lot.
It's a lot. It really is. Yeah. And then Fozzie introduces them to Jim and Gonzo and Rizzo as Dr. Livesay and his assistant Beaker.
And he calls them Chappies.
Yes, he does. He actually leans over to them and says, that's Chappie.
Yeah, Yes.
Do we think everybody knows that reference? I'll put a link in the show notes.
Sure. But I was thinking about it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in the two storybook movies, this and Christmas Carol, the two adaptations, I think Rizzo and Beaker are the only two characters to be like named their own names in both movies.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like,
to be do they not call him Gonzo in Treasure Island?
In Treasure Island, they do. I'm saying in Christmas Carol, he's Charles
Dickens. Oh, in both. I see. Yeah. Yes. Oh, right.
Both, and Beaker's name is
right.
Beaker.
Because, I see.
Yeah. Huh. In both, yeah.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
But, right.
Yeah, I'm just kind of going through all the characters in my head, but I think you're right.
Right.
It's confusing because Beaker is, I mean, I forget, I don't know what the time went, when people were using actual Beakers, but
right.
It's potentially one of the only anachronisms in terms of names, the automatic anachronism.
Well, yeah, one of the only anachronisms in a movie where Gonzo has a future in the NBA.
Yes.
let's see. I don't know about the name. Let's see. I'm trying to find the Griffin Beaker's name. Oh, okay. Never mind. None of this is anything. All right. Well, listeners, if you know anything about the invention of beakers, let us know.
Somebody does.
I'm sure they do. So then he also, I do like when Fozzie says, they do research and development for my papa.
Yes.
I like Fozzie's delivery of papa.
Yes, Fozzie's very old-timey now.
Yes, that's his new thing.
Yeah.
All right. And then... another thing we skipped over with Mr. Bimbo. I really do think Kevin Bishop's look of revulsion and annoyance is very funny.
Oh, it is. Yeah, I noticed that this time. Yeah,
says Mr. Bimbo.
Well, that's when Rizzo has the line, "I smell a bozo," which is whatever. Because also, what does a bozo smell like? But because Muppets can't do... They can't change their expression and do those kinds of takes. So, yeah, Kevin Bishop is doing a great, like, who is this guy? Yeah.
It's good. And then, but jumping back to where we were, Jim says, so Fozzie mentions his papa, or young Squire Trelawney mentions his papa.
Right.
And then Jim says they wanted to meet with his dad to get a ship for an ocean voyage. And, of course, young Squire does not know what the ocean is.
So, what a stupid guy.
He says, ocean, a few times. And then Rizzo tells
him... He looks at Mr. Bimbo, hoping for
some assistance there. More comedy, more hijinks. And then Rizzo tells him it's the big blue wet thing. And then young Squire Trelawney gets excited because he does know what that is.
You know, I'm just thinking, I think I would like the character of Squire Trelawney if it were not Fozzie. If it were... A new Muppet character who was so stupid.
Well, why? Like, we were actually just talking the other day. I think Becca and I were just talking about how one of the biggest missed opportunities of the 90s is that Beauregard just kind of disappeared.
Oh,
yeah.
Even though Dave Goles was around, you know, right. Like, there's no reason they couldn't use Bo, and Bo would be perfect for this role.
He would. You could absolutely just swap this out for Bo, and it would all make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he'd be in this movie, which would be
fun. And then I don't know what Fozzie would do, but they could figure something out.
Fozzie would be Long John Silver.
Okay.
I think he could just be Jim Hawkins and replace... I don't know if other people would complain about that kid, but I feel bad complaining about a kid.
Sure. I get it.
I like the big blue wet thing, and I really like that it's called back later.
In the song. During Sailing
Adventure. Yes. Yes, and also like it now more because it reminds me of, I think, a better version of that joke, where the Arrested Development joke. I think it's from the pilot, or maybe it's from the, I don't know if it's in the first one or the last one of the first season or something, where there's a thing about Buster having the Buster played by what's his name from Veep,
Tony Hale.
Having taken some courses in cartography or sailing or something, but not knowing that the blue on the map is water.
Yeah.
I was like, I think I like that. I mean, that's a different type of joke, but that immediately brought that joke to mind. And I do like the big blue wet thing as what you had, the idea that you would have to describe the ocean like that for him to get it. But it is weird for Fozzie because Fozzie yes, traditionally is not dumb. He's emotionally needy and
right, exactly. Kind of
flop sweaty. He's not so hard to please, stupid.
But he's not. This.
So then at this point, Bunsen recaps the plot out loud. Dr. Livesey looks at our characters and says, "Say, I know what's happening here. You chaps are planning to sail to this island, aren't you? To dig up this treasure." And I don't know why we need Bunsen to say that out loud at this point, when we all know that.
I mean, they might just think the kids in the audience need a little, you know, just so they can understand. I don't know.
It seemed to me like the idea was to make sure that Fozzie's character knows that. But I didn't know why he needed to know that. I guess to explain, because he's already seems excited about it before they explain it. So I didn't. It does feel you do kind of trip over it, going, "Oh, is this?" Because when I first happened, I hadn't seen the movie in a while, and I was thinking, "Oh, this is like." He's blown their cover. Like, now he knows that they're doing this and he's going to want part of the treasure or whatever. But like, that's not really the dynamic in that scene. So it is confusing that they kind of say it out loud as if you don't want him to know or something. I don't know. I was confused by that as well.
Right. So Jim says you got to be quiet about it. He doesn't want to spread the word around, all that stuff. And Gonzo's like real hyped that the pirates want to kill them. Gonzo's like so excited.
Yeah, as far as I know, the
pirates want to kill them.
On my document of tally marks for references to death and dying and killing, this is the second time the word kill has been used.
Is that right?
I think so, yeah. If I have it right.
But Rizzo like shakes his head in fear. He kind of like shivers about the idea because Rizzo's a scaredy boy, as we've established. And then young Squire, though, he wants to use one of his daddy's boats and personally finance the voyage himself. Because, as he says, what are rich half-wit sons for? Which is kind of cute.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's funny, but it's cute.
There's also Fozzie going, "Pirates, eh?" Which I feel like was in every trailer, every commercial, every promo for this movie.
Uh-huh.
Just to establish that this is a movie with pirates in it. They have Fozzie going, "Pirates."
Yeah, right. That makes sense. But then, so that's actually the end of that scene, but we got a little bit left in the clip here. But now they are no longer in young Squire Trelawney's house. They are outside at a dock. And a lot of the great directors like to take visual inspiration from great works of art, right? And if you've ever seen like Black Narcissus, for example, it looks like a beautiful Baroque painting, the works of Paul and Pressburger, bringing to mind the Dutch masters. Well, Brian Henson does the same thing here, where this looks exactly like a Thomas Kinkade painting.
Oh, man.
Because...
Do you think any middle-aged church-going ladies have this frame... this shot are on their wall in their living room?
I hope so. I really do hope so. But it's just, you know what I mean though? Like it's that sunrise or sunset glow with like the sun is kind of like two thirds of the way to one side in the background. And it's just some like tranquil seaside scene. Like there's a million of those that you can buy on jigsaw puzzles.
Oh yeah. Definitely
you know?
Puzzles. Yep.
Like, so anyways, then again, to make sure that the children know what's happening, Gonzo's next line is, "Well, here's the dock."
Yeah.
Jim, where's our boat? That's what he said, which feels so like, I don't know that it's, I can't remember. Do we see him say it? I think it's ADR stuff.
I think it's all kind of, yeah, there's a lot happening and a lot of background characters running around.
So my guess is that like they watch the footage and then we're like, we need to establish what this place is for the children, you know?
Yeah.
But then Rizzo says, "We're on a dock. No wonder I'm seasick." And my question is, Rizzo, where did you think you were? Like, what, they had to get there somehow, right? Like,
and that I tripped over that because I was sort of like, but a dock. I mean, I don't know. Do you get seasick on a dock?
Right,
Rizzo does.
I was. Yeah, I just like I get that there could be some. It sounds so like dorky to like. Pick apart the joke, but like I was sort of like, is it supposed to be the incongruity of like you're already getting seasick because you're on a dock, but the way it's phrased makes it weird. like, but it's like, it's just kind of a weak joke. Again, it kind of feels like a, that's your first line. And then
yeah,
you gotta rewrite, you gotta revise those to make the joke better.
I mean, this might even be an ad-lib, but yeah, I think it's the idea is he's so prone to seasickness that he gets seasick just being on a dock, just looking at the water.
Yeah. Yeah. I just feel like that could be communicated in a more clear, I don't know. It's not the best phrase joke, I would say.
Right.
Yeah. But then finally we hear Fozzie's voice again. Young Squire Trelawney is at the dock too, and he says, "Ahoy!" But we say farewell for now, because that is the end of this clip. So, we will find out what young Squire's up to when we rejoin him. Any thoughts about these minutes before we go, Jesse? Any final thoughts?
It's very indicative. This movie is about 20 minutes. Like you said, I think you said the number. It's 20-something minutes into the movie. Mm-hmm. And I can only... I don't think this happened during this scene, but I can only turn to my my daughter, who was probably little, like 1.5 or 2. Two, probably, when she saw a bit of this movie. I was writing about these movies for the AV Club, and so I had to rewatch some of them. And I think I was home with my kid, and I was like, "Hey, do you want to watch a little movie with me?" And it's like the Muppets. She knew the Muppets. So I was like, "Want to watch a movie? It has Kermit and the other Muppets." So she sat on the couch with me. And then some minutes into it, 10 or 15 minutes into it, maybe probably before the scene, but like spiritually, I feel like this is an even better point for this to happen. she wasn't talking that much when, because she was like still, I don't know, around 2 or a little less. She turned to me and just goes, "Kermit?" in this kind of accusatory way. And I was like, "Yeah, I get what you're saying. I promised you the Muppets and Kermit, and what are you have not gotten? It's 20 minutes in the movie, and he's about to make his entrance. Not no spoilers, I guess. But it's 20 minutes in the movie, and there's not a glimpse of Kermit yet, and you're not happy about it. And I understand. And I don't, I'm not like Kermit, or it doesn't always have to be Kermit as the main character. But my little then 2-year-old daughter." Was like, she wants to see Kermit, that she wants to see her guy.
Right.
And as much as I love Gonzo and Rizzo and Fozzie and Bunsen and Beaker. And I think she has liked some of those characters more when she got older, but that was the bottom line for her was like, you said we're going to watch the Muppets and Kermit's nowhere to be found. What's going on? And I got it. I was like, yeah, I remember kind of feeling, not in so few words, but I remember watching this movie for the first time and kind of going, Kermit? Like,
yeah,
anyone? Yeah, sure. I know. That's structurally for the story, who he plays. He can't show up earlier, really. But like that, you definitely feel that. Just watching this clip out of context for the first time in a while, and then I did go back and watch it from the beginning of the movie because I hadn't seen that in a while. So I watched like the first half an hour of the movie, and I was like, yeah, this is like right at the point where you start to get a little restless, going, yeah. All right, for me anyway, it was like, yeah, Gonzo and Rizzo, they've been doing shtick like nonstop for 20 minutes and you get Fozzie not really being Fozzie, and you haven't had Piggy yet either. And then there's no, and it, so Bunsen and Beaker, I will say like that little bit, even though it doesn't really kind of go as far as I would like, it does, it's kind of the bright side of the, what something I like about this movie. In general, like, I feel like this movie is sort of, I think of the storybook ones as being sort of like, what if, there was like this, a sketch on the Muppet Show, like was given like a ton of money and like able to just go on for, 85 minutes.
Yeah.
And I kind of like something they can't really do in Christmas Carol and can do here a little bit. And I really get a kick out of is have like, people come on and do their Muppet Show thing. Like they can't, like you said, Ryan, like Bunsen and Beaker are the guys collecting for the poor in Christmas Carol. And that's a cute use of them. And it makes sense to slot them in that way. Mm-hmm. But here that they're able to walk on and do a little, it's a very tiny bit because you don't even really see the lab or anything like that. You kind of want to see their R&D lab, right? You know, they just walk in and you don't get to see it. But like, that's a fun bit. It's like, oh, they're like doing their Muppet Show bit. But in Muppet Treasure Island, I thought that was kind of fun, kind of variety show note. And whenever the movie does stuff like that, I'm like, oh yeah, it's the Muppets. Like, they're doing Muppet Treasure Island, but they got to do their thing that they know how to do. And that's also, I think, why the Fozzie thing feels kind of falls flat, because you're like, oh no, wouldn't it be funny if he got to come on and do his bad stage act in some way in Muppet in the middle of Treasure Island, and he doesn't. Yeah. He just kind of plays this not very funny character.
Right.
But yeah, that's sort of the good and the bad of the movie in one little 2 minute slice.
Sure, Ryan. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, a few things. I think I'm sure we've talked about the production design of this. It was same production designer, Val Strazovec. I like it. So this, we only see a little bit of it here, but I like the set of the town in the background at the dock. It does feel very much akin to the city in Muppet Christmas Carol. There are these multi-story buildings with Muppets leaning out the windows. we don't need to list every single Muppet who's in the background of the shot, obviously, but I want to single out one.
And that's right, you can if you want to.
Like, no, I don't. We don't need to. And a lot of them are just like, there's a whatnot, and there's another whatnot, and there's another whatnot.
There's a rabbit. There's a penguin. There's
a dog, yeah. But no, the Kuzbanian Foob, who is visible in a window. This is a Muppet from one sketch on The Muppet Show. Kermit interviews him on the planet Kuzbane. And over the course of that sketch, he gradually changes his appearance every time the camera cuts back to him until finally he looks identical to Kermit. And I feel like you don't see him used as a background Muppet often. There's a lot of weird monsters and things that do get used a lot, but it's just fun to see the Kuzbanian Foob in the background of this shot. And then the city across the harbor, which I think is what inspired the Thomas Kinkade comparison. You can kind of see across the water. That is a miniature. I would have guessed maybe a matte painting, but in the director commentary, Brian Henson says it's miniatures, which is pretty cool. I'd be curious to know how big or how miniature it actually was.
You should write Brian Henson a letter.
I should. Does he still have them in storage somewhere?
Yeah, right.
Oh, then we've talked about this too. I'm sure we'll talk about it more. There was a ton of merchandise for this movie.
Weirdly higher amount than Christmas Carol. Or maybe much it's just more. That, like, maybe it's that they felt like they had made a mistake with Christmas Carol, not doing as much.
Yeah. Know? Or maybe they just something thought like an that. Adventure story lent itself more to that kind of thing. I don't know.
There's like a Happy Meal, right? I
think
I
can't believe I didn't
Happy
get
Meal
it.
Happy Meal bath toys.
I actually still have the Gonzo.
Oh, nice.
But one of these things, Calgon made Muppet Treasure Island bubble bath, which came in bottles shaped like the characters. And when I see Fozzie in his costume in this movie, I immediately think of the Fozzie Esquire Trelawney Calgon bubble bath bottle, which in this costume.
Did you and Joe have that in your Muppet Treasure Island themed bathroom in your apartment?
Oh, did we? We must have, right?
Probably.
I don't know, though. I do know that I had them, and I just not that long ago gave them away to a friend who's really a fan of Muppet Treasure Island. Because after all these years, it's like, what am I going to do with bottles that, you know, Muppet Treasure Island bubble bath? But, yeah. So then finally, something from the June 1st, 1994 draft of the screenplay. In the draft, when Squire Trelawney looks at the map, he says, "Bon Jovi, this looks to be a genuine treasure map."
How strange.
I don't know. Yeah. I Googled to see, like, does the name Bon Jovi mean something? Is it like Jove?
It's supposed to sound like By Jove, I think. Yeah.
But Fozzie's dumb, so he says Bon Jovi instead.
Yeah. But also, I mean, it fits in with, like, we talked about the NBA thing, the Star Trek thing. Like, there are lines in this movie that are just like, recognize this? That's a joke.
Yeah. Know? And then instead of I smell a bozo, Rizzo says they call him Coco because he's the biggest nut of all.
Huh.
That sounds, again, like a reference to something, well, but I don't think it is. It's like he's just because of coconuts.
So you know that I do not mean this as a compliment, but that sounds like such a Bob Hope joke. Like, it's so easy to imagine him saying that to Bing Crosby. In a road movie.
You know? Or, yeah, looking at the camera. And
yeah.
They call him Coco because he's the biggest nut of all. Yeah.
Right.
So
I'm also just, I'm a not, I shouldn't be surprised because this is how screenplays work, but like, I was just saying, oh yeah, this all kind of sounds like first draft. I'm delighted and kind of appalled to find out there were earlier worse drafts.
Well, yeah, so do you think I Smell a Bozo is an improvement? I guess it's easier
marginally,
to grasp. Coco makes you kind of just stop and think and get distracted trying to figure out what it means.
The word, I love the word bozo, so I'm always going to prefer that. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, listeners may remember that in this draft, Dr. Livesey and Beaker are seen earlier at the Admiral Benbow Inn. So in this scene, Dr. Livesey tells our three friends that they were there for the fire. And then Gonzo asks if everyone was okay. Dr. Livesey says, Mrs. Bliveridge, good lady, survived with only minor blisters. So they let us know that she's all right. I guess in the movie,
Do they do that thing again? Yeah.
No, not here. Oh, they should have. Yeah. But because in the real movie, we just see her fighting off pirates and we assume that she's going to be all right.
Right. She says, like, I'll be fine, boys.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So there you go. That's enough. They just leave it there. And then finally, in the draft, this whole group of characters from this scene is seen heading off to a small boat that's going to take them to the ship, which seems like a little bit more like just get to the ship. And in this scene, Jim is sad because he thinks Captain Smollett, who is also at the inn in this draft of the screenplay, Jim thinks Captain Smollett died in the fire at the inn. Mm. So,
which your daughter would have enjoyed that, Jesse, because he would have.
Yeah, you're gonna get a little bit of Kermit for him to then be hopefully then potentially killed. Yeah. that would have made her feel much better.
Right. But I mean, I can see not only introducing Kermit earlier, but then introduce a little bit of suspense. Like, is Kermit okay? Yeah.
Yes, is Kermit dead? Did we kill
Kermit? Is Kermit dead? Like, for that split second in Muppets Take Manhattan when he gets hit by the car, and you're just wondering, oh, is this the one where Kermit dies?
Kermit does die in Muppets Take Manhattan. You're thinking of Philip Phil. It's a different guy. Oh,
right. Yeah. New guy. Yeah, different guy.
At that point, Philip Phil is introduced in a hospital bed.
So, yes, that's all I have.
The Kermit you knew was dead.
Right, yeah. It's like a real Paul McCartney situation. Oh. And so now it's time for me to once again open up the strange case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Because this scene basically happens in the book. Jim takes the captain's stuff, Billy Bones' sea chest, to Dr. Livesey and Squire Trelawney, where they find a book chronicling Flint's pirate voyage and also a treasure map, and then they talk about that. Like, that's how it goes. As I said, they don't find the map until they get there.
Is the book called Treasure Island?
Is the book in the book that they find?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. It just says like a hardbound, like a, I can't, do you want me to look it up?
It's just like a collection of ship's logs or something?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a bound book of journals, basically.
Sure. Sure.
And then there's a lot of stuff about how Squire Trelawney is going to go ahead to like ready the Hispaniola. Like, he's getting the ship ready and he tells Jim to wait. So you know how novels are paced differently from movies? There's a lot of stuff about like Jim just kind of hanging out. Like, wait, they like set him up with a room and he just like waits for a while. And then he's going to go to the ship, and we'll find out about that later, I suppose.
Just get to the ship, people.
Right. Dear Robert Louis Stevenson, just get to the ship.
Yeah.
You just get to the ship.
Yeah. All right. So then before we go, Jesse, we have two questions we're asking all of our guests this year. First one is, what is your history with Muppet Treasure Island?
Yeah, I feel like I have a good answer to this one. This movie came out in February of 1996, if I recall correctly.
You are correct.
Also, side note, crazy that like 2 weeks later, Muppets Tonight premiered. What a time to be alive.
Yeah. Right.
Muppet movie in the theaters. I was trying to think, the last time that must have happened was like, what, Great Muppet Caper, where the show was on
the summer right after the show ended. Yeah. So.
Oh, okay. So this is really, maybe potentially the first time since the first movie that was really happening, because I'm sure plenty of theaters were still playing it in early March. I was a 15-year-old boy and had seen all of them in I'd only seen the Manhattan and Christmas Carol in the theaters, but I was a huge Muppet fan as a kid. And was 15 when this movie came out, and I have a really strong memory of going to see it because, you know, I think I still saw like the Disney movies and a lot of kids movies and stuff when I was this age, because I wanted to usually, and I would then take my sister, who was a bit younger, 7 years younger than I am, to go see this kind of thing. I don't know that she would have been that interested. She was not like a big Muppets person. But this was like the first movie I saw with a couple, well, at least one, became a guy who became a good friend of mine in high school, and I'd known for a few years, but I was maybe not that close with, didn't really know if we were friends, and this was a kind of an early outing with like a group of friends who sort of became my closest high school friends. And I don't remember how it was that I knew that a bunch of us are gonna go see Muppet Treasure Island, but and then, yeah, there was like a range of people, like from, you know, one of my kid who's already one of my best friends, and a guy I had lunch with every day, and this other guy who I knew who, you know, was always sort of like, I don't know if we're friends or not. Uh-huh. I forget who else was there. It may not even have been those exact same people, but these are like, those three guys are like the guys who became like my close high school friends, and like I'm still in touch with today. And it was just like, I was so happy and relieved that, like, you know, I didn't have a ton of friends in like junior high school or middle school. I had like a few good friends, and just like being like, oh, these guys like want to go see Muppet Treasure Island.
Yeah.
And are like, sure. You know, not in an ironic way, and not in a taking your kid sister to see it away, just in a like, oh, there's a Muppet movie out. Like we should go see this. Yeah. We like the Muppets. We got to go see the Muppets. And you know, we would go see, like, I feel like there was a big deal about going to see GoldenEye the previous month, or the previous year rather. And then, like, you know, I think I'm sure some of us went to see Broken Arrow earlier this month. But like the fact that these guys like for sure wanted to see Muppet Treasure Island and like got it together to go see it on like the opening weekend, I just felt like such relief I was like, oh, I found people who I'm like, this is cool, this is fun, this is gonna be okay, this is cool. And I was correct, that instinct that, oh, if they want to see Muppet Treasure Island, that we're actually gonna be friends,
great,
was true. And, yeah. Nice. I still, the four of us group text, and one of them was like is like my actual, you know, best friend. But even the other two guys, like, are two of the people from high school I keep in touch with the most. And, you know, I think at least some of us saw Muppets from Space together. And we, you know, did a lot of movie stuff and a lot of dumb stuff. But it was just like, that was a really nice experience, remembering like, oh, okay, this is, yeah, I kind of found that was like almost exactly, you could say, the moment where I'm like, okay, I kind of found my people. And like for the last 2 years of high school, it's going to be okay. Like these guys are your guys.
Mm. That's great.
I think, and a couple girls, but not, it's mostly the guys.
That's yeah, so hard. It was really nice. And it really is.
Yeah. It was. So I've always felt warmly toward the movie because of that, even though I don't remember that much about the experience of actually watching it so much. It's just like, oh, okay, this was, I'm so excited that I found people to go see it with and all.
Love that. So then the second question is, where now as an adult do you rank, do you rank it among the Muppet movies?
Yeah. You know what? I don't know if this is a hot take. I have to listen to some of the other folks, how people rank it, but I would put it last among the Muppet movies.
That's not a hot take. Like you're
okay. I feel like there's like a second wave of nostalgia for the storybook ones, and I feel like everyone goes to Muppets from Space as being the worst one, but I really like Muppets from Space pretty well. It's not like, it doesn't the perfect, I was really excited for it, so it was not the perfect, you know, it was not the Muppet movie of my dreams that I kind of was picturing when I saw the trailer.
Right, sure. Sci-fi Muppet but movie. I think, I can't wait.
Yeah. And it's all about Gonzo, who was always my favorite as a kid. Sure. And weirdly, though, Gonzo was my favorite as a kid, I think there's something about Muppet Treasure Island, though I do like it, of course. It's a very charming movie, and I love the, you know, the puppetry in it and like a lot of the craft of it. And it's very fun. But I think over the years, it's kind of separated a little from me from Muppet Christmas Carol. Cause I think for a long time, I would have rated them pretty close together.
Sure.
But Christmas Carol, I think, has has kind of the advantage of an emotional through line of, you know, that's okay, the Muppets doing this story, and it's not as comedic. Like when I made my Muppet Show kind of Muppet Show sketch going on for 90 minutes analogy, this is probably closer to that aesthetic than the actual Christmas Carol, which is relatively serious for a Muppet movie. It has plenty of funny stuff, of course, but like, because it's a pretty straight telling of the story in a lot of ways, there's a lot of it that's pretty serious, and it's anchored by that Michael Caine performance everyone loves, justifiably. And this one, it just feel that doing that again, even though I enjoy the kind of more Muppet Show-y elements of it, like Cabin Fever and all that, lots of good stuff in it, but it feels much more like they're adhering to a formula that was set by Christmas Carol and doing so less effectively. You even have like, oh, instead of Michael Caine, you got Tim Curry, and Tim Curry is great, and he's a lot of fun, but it's not really as revelatory. And the emotional through line from the humans, that sort of, you know, with the kid who plays Jim, I just like, I don't know if I just don't like listening to children sing, but I don't care much for the kid in it. And I'm sure he did his best. That's not, you know, the kid's fault. But I don't have the same emotional attachment that I do to Caine's performance in Christmas Carol. And I don't have the same attachment to the Treasure Island book for that matter as I do the Christmas Carol book. So that's probably part of it. And it just feels like, oh, okay, last time Gonzo and Rizzo, that was great. So like this time they should also be the main ones in it. And last time Kermit had kind of a supporting role in this. Let's do that again, because we're still kind of like a little cautious about putting Kermit front and center with a different guy as Kermit. And it's just all those things, like kind of a lot of the beats of it kind of play to me like, oh, this is Christmas Carol warmed over.
Yeah.
And I think it would be great if they did like a really, really funny version. I think the idea is probably to make it like Christmas Carol, but like more kind of overtly comedic, which would be great. And some of it is funny. But as I was saying about the section we watched, some of the jokes are not the best. It feels a little musty and it just feels not that fresh. And you could kind of, it's funny, like, I know when Jason Segel was promoting the Muppets that he did, which I mostly really like, he was sort of, like, bad-mouthing the storybook ones, and then, like, you know, I feel like there's some people who, like, really didn't like the storybook ones, but then on there are also people who kind of grew up with them and kind of think of those as, like, main ones and whatever. And I think the reason I kind of bristled when he would badmouth them, because I was like,
it also kind of seemed like he hadn't actually seen them, because he was talking about Muppets in the Old West and Muppets Underwater, neither of which actually
exist. Yeah.
Right.
I like that the Christmas Carol mistaken for Old West and Treasure Island being mistaken for Underwater. So I didn't love him sort of knocking Brian Henson's keeping the Muppets going while after his dad died. See, it seemed a little, you know, that seemed a little cheap to me. But I can see also how going from Christmas Carol to Treasure Island could pretty quickly make you go, this is pretty tired. Even though they only did two. I mean, like, that's, I know that there's some TV movies like Muppet of Wizard of Oz and stuff like that were kind of more on this pattern. But there's only two of them theatrically, but I could still see how this movie could kind of quickly, I wouldn't say sour you on it, but I would say make it feel kind of more played out than it really is. Like I was not particularly, you know, champion the bit to see a third Muppet story movie after this one.
Sure.
Like A Christmas Carol, beautiful production design, beautiful, like little, you know, Muppet costumes, great, like, you know, background Muppets and like little, you know, cameos and like just like kind of bits of visual whimsy. And so I can't be mad at it. But if in terms of like what one do I want to watch at any given time, even though I was excited to rewatch it for this because I was like, I haven't seen it that many times. I've probably only seen it three times or something like that compared to like God knows how many times I've seen Great Muppet Caper, probably 15 or something like that. Sure. But I always end up watching it and going, oh, yeah, that, like, we kind of wish this were a little better. I like the visual detail and a lot of the jokes, and it's fun, but it's not quite as, you know, and I end up thinking of the Simpsons bit about, like, the Muppets Go Medieval or whatever. Oh, yeah. It was a pretty funny, like, imitation of that. So, yeah, I mean, I do like it, but it is probably my least favorite. It's also striking to me because knowing that Muppets Tonight was happening at the same time, and with my best friend Rob, who I saw, one of the guys I think I saw this one with, we definitely watched Muppets Tonight at his house a bunch and like loved it. And that show felt very fresh to me and like did a nice job of bringing in new Muppets and blending them with the old Muppets and all that. So it's kind of weird to me in retrospect. I'm sure they were not actually on the same production timeline because, of course, movies take longer to make. Mm-hmm. But it's weird to me that this kind of fresher, funnier version of Muppets from 1996 was on TV, while this kind of like a little wheezier kind of like the Muppets kind of don't really feel, you know, they're freshest in Muppets Treasure Island. It's weird that those things were happening near simultaneously, at least for a viewer. And I think I would have liked more of Muppets Tonight energy in Muppet Treasure Island.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Well, that brings us down to the end of another one. Jesse, thank you so much for joining us again. Always a pleasure.
Of course.
Yes, thank you.
And
thank you guys for having me.
Listeners, we'll be back next week with another one. But until then, you can check out toughpigs.com on the internet, various social medias. We're all over the place. We're stapling up our flyers on telephone poles. We're doing all kinds of stuff. You can become a patron on our Patreon page. You can buy our t-shirts on TeePublic. We don't have any Muppet Treasure Island themed t-shirts because
not yet.
Because what?
Lack of interest? Or?
I think that's right. And you can email us, of course, at movingrightalong@toughpigs.com. You can follow Ryan on Blue Sky at me, Ryan Rowe. And you can follow me on Blue Sky at Durwood Clapper. You can follow Ryan on Letterboxd at Movies Are Neat. And me on Letterboxd at Zeppo Marxist. Jesse, where can our listeners find you and your work?
I'm very sorry to say that you could find me on Twitter, which I will not call the other thing. It's Rock Marooned on Twitter. I am on Blue Sky. I just don't really use it that much. I'll start following you guys on Blue Sky and see if it gets me going to say stuff there.
Sure.
I feel like I just use it for complaining, you know, like, cause I'm like, oh, not that many people are following me here. I can like talk on the Blue Sky, which is not the what I'm supposed to be doing with it. But yeah, Rock Marooned on Twitter is the best way to find me. Posting about what I've written, you can go to like pacemagazine.com or decider.com or occasionally gq.com to find stuff I've written recently. But if I'm being honest, Twitter is the best way to the best shortcut to that. I'm trying to delete it applies to my whole Twitter presence at this point.
Sure. All right. Awesome. And I guess I didn't say it yet. Thank you, as always, to Morgan Davey for designing our logo, our beautiful logo, which you can buy on a t-shirt at our TeePublic store. And I hope you do, because I have one and it looks great. And thank you, listener, for telling everyone you've ever met that your favorite podcast is Moving Right Along. We'll be back next week with another episode. Goodbye.
See you on the big blue wet thing.